To 2030, you used to have all kinds of little agencies. You know, before, you know, the state made it more legitimacy. And they used to have a little tiny cards, you know. They made me 50, 60 cards in front of the agency. Oh, what a racket they used to have. Boy, oh, boy. It's a colorful place, though, you know.
They still have something like that in the apartment. Running apartments in the village. Have nothing to do with what you're going to see.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Luxurious.
Yeah.
Chicken shack on the roof.
Yeah.
Cozy ground level.
We're missing by the code of New York. Huh?
Oh, the story? Oh, so I go back to get the certificate, but I ain't got no certificate. So the old days, remember the old days when I had Antica Johnson shoes, he used to put a certificate and saying, these shoes are guaranteed to wear for so long. So I knew one guy 4 years ago bought a pair of shoes. So I get the certificate from him and I got a big crayon, put a red cross there, and I rush back and go, and I come up and says, here's my certificate. He says, is that junior or senior? I said, that's senior. He looks quick. He wants to fill it. You got the job. He says, give me $5. So I count it out in pennies and nickels. So I take the short line bus up the number 9 highway up to Swan Lake in the Pines, see? And he gives me a little contract. So I get up there and I get out of the bus and the station wagon comes over and he says, I'm from Shinders in the Pines. I'm here to help you with your baggage. I said, what do you mean baggage? What are you trying to pull the big stuff on me? I had a little paper bag. and my shorts, a moth-eaten pair of shorts, and a few bananas. And a toothbrush was hanging out of the bag. And she says, what? Come on, let's go. I said, let's go. Let's eat. Come on, let's get going. What we're eating. And they look at me. They look at me, you know. So we get in the station wagon. We come over. We drive into the place. And I says to the guy, I said, where's the Pines? He says, well, they burned down 3 years ago. Said, well, all right. So I walk into the hotel, and there's two old cockers ran a joint, Joe and Abe Shin, as I remember. So I walk in, and I give my contract, and the old guy, he says, let's see your contract. He says, here it is. That's right. You got $9 a week, and you eat. And he looks me up and down. He says, go wash up and get ready. We eat at 6. At 4 o'clock, I was sitting on the porch waiting to get into the mess hall. I was there for 2 months. Nobody ever beat me in. Oh, yeah, one time one guy tried to beat me. I tripped and then he broke his leg. How I ate, it was like the last day on earth. Ooh, sour cream and borscht and yellow corn and herring. And in 1 week I'd pick up 16 pounds. So I'd go out, leave them, and the bus boys asked me, please, Yang, leave the table, will you? Give us a break. So I'd get out on the porch, and I'd sit on the porch in a rocking chair, and I'm rocking back and forth. Well, there was a small crowd, about 25, and I'm telling stories, and they're having a fair telling about Minnesota, and I'm not making predictions on what will happen with Hoover, and my stomach is getting big, and I got sandwiches in my pockets, and fruit in here. And the old man is listening. She's listening to us. He comes over, he says, Yangel, he says, you like it here? I says, I tell you, I love it. He says, why shouldn't you? He says, you're living, he says, like a king. I says, well, I says, I'll be all right. He says, you I know will be all right. He says, is there any reason for eating so desperately? He says, I know you can chew, but maybe you can't swallow. Take it easy. I says, Uncle, I says, don't worry, I'll lower my altitude. It won't be long. He says, please, Hank, give me a break. You know, I'll tell you, I wouldn't board you for $100 a week. Anyhow, so I kept fattening up and this and that. Well, more people start coming, you know. So I come as a lifesaver, mind you, but I can't swim. But I got to put up a front. So I go down a beach one day and I walk out to the water as high as my nose. That I knew was my deadline. If I go beyond that, I'm done. There was a tree on the right side of the beach, and I get a rope, I tie it from the tree. I get a big stone, and I drop the stone, I take a rope from the stone, I tie it on an inner tube, and there's another tree, and I create a little lagoon. If you go beyond the lagoon, 10 feet out, I'm goner. So I put a sign up, beware, beyond this 10 feet is dangerous, poisonous frogs. snapping toads. and twisting snakes. I had all kinds of crazy. People started talking, what kind of life is that? I've never seen him go in the water. All he does is eat. He posted a sign, snapping frogs and twisted toads, and we never heard of them. Anyhow, I wouldn't go. So one fat lady used to come down all the time, see? Her name was Mrs. Rosenberg from Brooklyn somewhere. And I used to row around the lagoon. So she said, you know, you're a funny life guy. I never see you swim. I said, listen, Mrs. Rosenberg, a chicken lays eggs, but he don't have to eat his own eggs, does he? She said, well, that's what the hell is that going to do with it? I said, anyhow, I said, nevertheless, don't worry about it. You don't stretch your luck. You just don't stretch your luck, that's all. She said, well, I'd like to dive. I said, dive with your flesh, you should dive. Stay in the boat. She weighed about 225, I don't know, maybe more or less. Anyhow, I'm out there and I'm rowing around the little lagoon, you know, and I'm thinking of what the menu is for the next meal. And I noticed the boat starts shaking, see? Jeez, I get worried and I turn around and sure enough, she's standing in the end of the boat and she's gonna dive. Well, I go to reach to grab her, the boat tips, I tip, and we both wind up on the outside of the rope. Jeez, I figure, what's gonna happen now? I says, I've gotta save myself somehow. Next thing I know, she's riding me piggyback. Around that water, I says, well, if I'll start, I'll hit bottom, I'll walk myself in, maybe I can save her, throw her off my back, I can save myself from her, and I'll live a little. I start walking in, but she's so heavy, and I sink in the mud, and when I come to, a lifesaver from Plotnick in the Pines has given me artificial respiration on the other beach, and I'm opening my eyes, you know, I can see much. And it's 1939, just Hitler is coming to power. There's a big crowd, and I hear funny noises, and people are talking like, oh, it's such a shame, such a job like this. All he does is eat, and he can't swim. You guys, don't worry, he's got a lot of guts. You got to give him credit. He's got nerve. It takes a lot of guts when he can't swim to go out in the water and take a chance. So the old man, they're all hollering to you, boss is coming running, see? So the old man, Schindler's come running over. He's, what happened? The guy says, who, what, where, hi, how? He says, who's there, he says. It's your uncle, he says. What happened? He said, he says, well, the lifesaver, he nearly drowned. And he sinks his head in his hands, and everybody's quiet, see? And the tension starts to mount. What's going to happen? What's he going to do with me, see? So one guy says, shall I tell him when he comes to, Mr. Schindler? Shall I tell him to go? And the guy says, hey, it's a shame. All of a sudden, the old man sits down at a log, and he bursts out laughing, I'm like, hysterically. And he's laughing, and he says, what's happened, Mr. Chinnis? He says, fire him, what's the matter? He says, it's the funniest thing happened in the last 40 years that I've been in a hotel. I've never seen a guy like him, he says. He stays for the rest of the season, and he eats the best, he says. He says, I'm going to treat him like a king, you know. So I finished the season royally, you know. Then we came back to New York, and I went back to dramatic school. I think to pick up where I left off. Pick up with the sheet metal again. Well, we used to have quite a gang there, you know. From the group theater at the time when Morris Karnofsky was there, and Garfield, Jules Garfield used to come over and teach a class, and then they used to adopt some student. But nobody adopted me. I was a loner, you know. Matter of fact, I got a little story. Oh, no, well, tell one. Should I keep going?
Sure, anything you want, Dad.
Yeah, well, anyhow, before I come, I had to pick up some money, see? So somebody told me, well, I should go in burlesque, see? So there was a burlesque on 125th and 3rd Avenue called the Gotham Burlesque. And things were tough. So I go up, and he says, the way to do, to learn something, is if you get into the burlesque, you don't have to be an actor right away, but even if you get a job, as a candy butcher hustling peanuts, you know, you get the experience, you watch the comics work and you listen, see. So I come over and there's an ad in the Examiner, it says, candy butcher wanted for burlesque. Must have big voice and talented. What do you need talented? To hustle candy, you gotta be talented. So I walk over and he says, what do you mean? You got a big voice? I says, yeah. So he tries me out, see. He says, here's a basket full of Hershey bars and candy. And the comics are working on stage, they're working their bits. I go out and walk through the aisles and start hollering hot peanuts and Hershey bars. I started walking hard. Peter, it's Richard, I'm open up my mouth like a bull, you know. And the comedians, they can't hear themselves talk. He says, who's that? Tell that bum to keep quiet, see? He says, you're hired. He's got a good voice. Fine. I says, fine, it's nice. So I start working, see? So, you know how we work in a burlesque. First, we start out with salted peanuts, right? First, you get them thirsty, right?
Right.
After you come with the peanuts, then you start coming in with sodas to loosen up their throat. After the sodas, you tighten them up again with Hershey bars. And then you loosen them up with orange juice. See? And this goes on. And no matter if there's 50 people in the audience, a depression, you know, a lot of guys have no place to go, they go to relief office, then they come to burlesque. But I, you know, I was a kind-hearted, as I said before, and I'd go through an aisle maybe 25, 30 times, the same people, you know, and they're winching. They see me, and the minute they come, they can't stand my voice because it's raucous. And they bought all they can buy because probably only had an allotment of 15, 20 cents for one bag of peanuts. So I says, Moish, I says, I tell you, it's no good. I mean, you can't keep punching these people. You're knocking them out. He says, I want to tell you one thing I want you to remember all your life. In one word, it's grind. Grind them, he says. Don't show them no mercy. He says, just keep grinding, see? All right, hot peanuts, and I grind them. I'm telling you, boy, I'm telling you. They'd buy just to get me out of the aisle. But I'm not making much. I'm only making 10 cents on a dollar, see? And one day I came home with 90 cents. So I come back to the rooming house. And 20 cents, the landlady says, yeah, we need the rent. So she was an Irish landlady, a nice little lady, you know. So she says, where's the rent? I said, can't pay it. She said, what are you doing, Yank? I said, I'm hustling peanuts in a burlesque over there, Gotham. She said, good Jewish boy, you can. I can't get the imagination. She says, what's the matter with you? And I'm slow with it. I said, what do you say? What do you mean, Mrs. Murphy? Why don't you bag your own nuts? I said, well, what do you mean? She says, go down, she says, and get some nuts, get 50-pound bag of nuts, peanuts, and buy some bags, and get an air pump over at the Vegas hardware store, put 12, 15 peanuts in a bag and pump them up with a pump. And sell 4 bags of yours and so much for the company, and then keep adding, you know. So I get a couple of the rumors there, and we buy the nuts, and I bought some rotten ones, believe me, because we tested them out, you know. You know, when you break a peanut and the dust in it, dust blows all over. I don't know, I put 12, 13 peanuts in a bag, and we pumped. We made them pretty pregnant, you know. They were looking pretty good. So I come in. First time I had a belt, an old ammunition belt, and I used to pack them in the BAR belt, see. And I was loaded, maybe 20 bags, 20 rounds I had. And I come in there, and I used to sell 60, 70 bags of peanuts. First bag, I sold 40 ears and 16 of mine. The next night, of 35 ears and 18 of mine. And I'm shrinking him up, see? And then when I go to the aisle, you know, I'd be selling a lot of slinger. Jesus! And then I'd see a smoke screen that come up with the rotten, the dust that come out of the dusty peanuts, you know. And I'm telling you, it was a riot. I couldn't help but laugh, you know. So then I start getting selfish, and I want to make a big kill, and I want to hit it big, see? So the guy had the ammunition belt. He went and left. He went on a relief march to Washington, and he took the belt with him to carry sandwiches. So I had to figure out another gimmick. So I got a big belt. I stuffed the bags in my belly. See, geez, I was really loaded. And I got on a Salvation Army. I got a big coat, and I looked like a real carpet bagger. Oh, I was loaded down with peanuts, with air too. See. So I walk in, and for my misfortune, I'd eaten something that's upset my stomach, some chili, and I had to go to the men's room. Oy, oy, oy. So I didn't realize, you know, I'll unbuckle my belt, and boom! Food is exploding, the nuts are popping up in the air, and the bags are blowing up in the air, and the boss come walking in, and he says, who's in there? I says, nobody. And I'm kicking the nuts out, and he opens the door, and he says, Yankee says, after this is the biggest disillusionment I've ever had in my many years of business. He says, you know, he says, I had prospects of putting you in Coney Island, he says. Your beautiful voice, he says, you'll be a peanut salesman. He says, you would have gone someday, you'd be in Nathan's. He says, honor before duty. He says, I'd like to keep you, but you got to go. So he fired me, and I had to go looking for other jobs. So I got in with went back to Local 65. I knew, I used to be on a picket line on Union Square, like me and Zero Mostel. We used to run the Days of Spain, see? We used to shake hands to help the Spanish cause. And we'd go into the Union Square, and he'd get up and make a speech. Fellow workers, we must help out and donate and this and that. And I'd shake the can, and I'd get up, and I'd make a speech, you know. And we used to raise quite a bit of money, you know. And so one guy come in, he says, hey, Yankee, he says, you look pretty funny. He says, we got a Dematic group in the union. He says, why don't you come and join up with us, he says, and we put on Dematics, and you'll be able to help on the picket lines. Okay, we'll give you a job, too. I says, fine. So he gets one. I says, what'll I do? He says, well, you'll get a job with a push guard. I mean, not a push guard, but a merchandise conveyor. That's pushing the stuff around on 38th Street. You used to call it transportation engineer. So I get a job on 38th Street from a guy called Gewurz Textiles. And I got on my duties is to deliver the goods from one shop to another. See, and the war is, Hitler's come to power, the war is breaking out. And anyhow, so he says, you're a good kid, he says, I'm gonna make something out of you. He says, just tend to business, don't bother with those troublemakers from the union. I said, that's all right, Mr. Gewurz. I'll be a faithful worker because I want to mount to something. I want to be a good boy. So we used to have a deal, see? The big cases that the goods used to come into, we used to get $2 a case. But the guy I worked with, he was selling the case, he never gave me no money. So I said, Max, I says, how about starting to divide the cases? The guy, I need the money. He's telling you, you don't need to worry. You're young, he says. You just came into the shop. Take it easy, have patience. I got a lot of patience, I still like money. He says, well, a couple of weeks this week, I want to buy the babies a little medicine, the next week some shoes. I said, all right, but don't, the week after, tell Yanka likes to get a little money too. I like to go out with girls. I want to go to the show and everything, and I need a little money. So third week comes, I says, Max, how about dividing the cases? Then he gets in the adamant, you know, independent, self-righteous. He says, I don't need to divide with you like that. He says, well, what do you mean? Well, what can I do? So I don't say nothing. The next day I walk in, I got enwrapped in a piece of paper. I'm carrying an axe. So I walk in with the axe. I go down to the basement. So the boss says, where you going? Yeah, I said, I'm busy. I got a job to do. I go in the basement and start chopping up the boxes. On his time, I'm chopping boxes. He says, yeah, I go out and deliver. I said, I'm sorry, Mr. Gewurz, I'm busy chopping. He says, I'm paying you not to chop. He said, what's the matter, you're crazy? I said, I destroyed every box. So he called the business agent, he said, this man, he said, started to make trouble. This morning he was chopping boxes instead of going deliveries. I said, it's dangerous to go out there. He said, they had an air raid and he wanted me to go out. And there was an air raid siren, you know. So the agents, he said, Yang, what's the matter? The air raid made you nervous? No, I said, I'm liable to get killed. I said, besides, the government said, whenever there's an air raid, you don't do no work at all. He says, a guy like you wouldn't do no harm, he says, to get shook up a little. Anyhow, he used to send me to get sandwiches, see? And they used to have a place called Lou Siegel's on 38th Street, see? And this was a fat, funny man, you know. In New York, they have what they call celery water, see?
And he used to get it, see?
So he used to send me over, and he says, God, why don't you get a corned beef sandwich? Very lean, see? So I'd go. And they used, you know how they sell in the garment center the hot corn? One guy sells hot corn, and they'll butter it, you know, and another guy sells hot chestnuts, you know. Yeah. So I'd go to the alley, and I'd pick up a yellow corn, I'd buy it on 37th Street, I'd butter it on 38th Street. And then I'd buy it on 38th and butter it on 37th, see, back and forth. So I'd go over to Lou Siegel, I'd buy the sandwich, I'd bring it back. So I give him the sandwich. He says, what kind of sandwich is this? It's too lean. I said, tell him, Mr. Kubert, they're very busy. It's lunchtime. I says, what do you want from me? Listen, he says, you go and tell him. You tell him who I am. I've got a $100,000 business. You go and tell him. When Mr. Gawart says it's too lean, it's too lean. So I go back and I say to the guy, I says, my boss says that this sandwich is too lean. So the guy, who's your boss? I says, Mr. Gawart's textiles. You can tell your boss, you know, lean. I'm giving you the sandwich. If you don't like it, you can shove it. So I go back and I feel like an idiot. I says, this is the sandwich you told me. If you don't like it, you can shove it. Did you tell him I got a business for $100,000? I told him, he still told you. So then I asked for a raise, see. He says, you're not worth what you're getting, Yank. I says, nevertheless, I says, the Wagner Relations Act guarantees me a right to ask for a raise. What do you mean the Wagner Relations Act? Where do you get that kind of mishigas? He guarantees. I says, I got the sixth section of the fourth paragraph. And I had a regular bookshop in the back there. Believe you me, I had more literature, Daily Worker, and I had the mainstream and the masses, and I had Das Kapital and all kinds of literature, everything. Not only that, but I used to walk on the street. I was a walking literature star. I used to tear my pockets out so I could carry pamphlets on all the linings, you know. He says, he's the manager of a walking literature store. He asked me for a raise. He only worked there 3 months. He's lazy as the devil. I can't get him to do nothing. And he's working secretly. I don't know what he's doing, but he's painting now. And I wouldn't let nobody show me what to do. So sure enough, I come out. One day I break out at 8 o'clock in the morning with a sign, Mr. Gawart is unfair. Who's he unfair to? He's unfair, period. He pleads me, what are you picking me? What do you want from me? He says, I've got to get rid of you somehow. I've got to buy your contract. See, because I already established seniority. The only way you can get rid of me is buy my contract. So they called the business agent in and he says, I got to get him out. He's got to go. I says, Mr. Gawart, I love it here. He says, you Yankel, he says, I can't stand you. You're schlamazzled now and you'll always be. He says, please, what do you want to leave? I says, well, I says, I'm an incorruptible person. And I don't like to wear money, I don't like to bargain for money. He says, what'll you take? I says, you're pushing me and I says, for 400 rubles I'll go. What'll you settle for? I says, 300. So for 300 I bought his contract up and he got rid of me. Then they put me in another shop, a little button shop. Oh, I want to tell you about the organizing days. Listen to this. You see, we had a unique deal. See, this union was really different. If you ever heard of local, it was a tremendous organization union. We had gimmicks. Boy, it was wonderful. When we go out to an organizer's shop, for example, during lunch hour, if we had a shop to organize, and the organizer on 37th Street said, we wanted you to come out in front of Louis Beer's shop, they'd sacrifice half their lunch hour to come over to organize, to help us. We called it a mass demonstration. Well, I was in buttons at the time, see? And we were organizing buttons in U2 on 38th Street. So everybody in the buttons is practically signed up. But Goldstein's button shop, he don't want to sign, see? And why don't he want to sign? Well, we knew why. Because all the other button houses were using him as a testing to test the strength of the union, see? If Goldstein don't sign, they could maybe break the union. And brother, he was a big operator. He had buttons. A lot of buttons. Incidentally, so I'll tell you what happened. So we come into Goldstein. We says, first the organizer went in and says, Mr. Goldstein, well, you know, the button the contract, we got to close the contract. We need the buttons. We got to, they want a new contract. He says, forget about it. I'm not interested. I'm busy. So about one afternoon, 40 guys go up in the lunch hour. We walk upstairs, four guys stay downstairs. Someone went up, and two guys went over to the telephone, waited, and then the other guys walked down the long aisles, maybe 100 feet of buttons. And he comes over to the telephone, and he's going to call the police. So my friend gives him a punch on the head, get your hands off the telephone. What do you mean? What do you want? He says, what are you doing here? I says, well, we want to talk about the contract. He says, I don't sign no contract with your bums. Well, he says, Mr. Goldstone, ask him for a little contract and everything be fine. And in the aisles, the fellows are there. They want to ask you again, Mr. Goldstein, do you want to sign the buttons? You know, there are a lot of buttons here. Sure is a lot. Man, there's a lot of buttons. And there must be about 1 million buttons here. You going to sign, Mr. Goldstein? I don't sign with nobody. Boom, and we start kicking those buttons, boxes. Oh, I'm telling you. When I was running down the stairs, there must have been buttons hot to my knees. We kicked every box of buttons down. I bet he's still counting those buttons. Well, he signed. I tell you, it wasn't long after he signed. One time we came to the wrong shop. We pushed buttons over, I'm telling you. It was the wrong shop. We'd already signed. And all afternoon, the police were cruising up and down the streets, and we'd change our clothes and everything. Oh, what we used to pull off there. Boy, oh, boy. That was Local 65. It was the garment workers.
What's this about cutting the pockets out so you can carry more, have
them? Well, we had, those were in the 30s, you know, and then there was a lot of progressive movement there, you know. And we used to have a little pamphlet called a champion, and I used to push that quite a bit. Well, if you cut your pockets out, you can get a hell of a lot of leaflets in, you know. Yeah. And, geez, the kids would get with their little push guards would come in, you know, and they'd say, what do you read? I read the Daily News. What do you mean? You're mad? Never heard of the champion? It's a little small paper. Who heard of the champion? Except us guys who are pushing the cause. You don't read a champion? Well, I didn't read it. Well, up to now, well, all right, here's a champion. Read it. You got pockets? What do you mean you got pockets? Sure I got pockets. Well, cut one out and carry literature. So we make a recruit. He'd cut his pocket out and the pamphlets would drop down and he'd start carrying them too, you know. Oh, man, boy, what happened? Then when one kid, I remember one time I had a kid came into the shop, and he used to run quick, see? Oh, he used to deliver fast. But we had a rule, beyond 34th Street, never make it quicker than an hour. When you go beyond the Mason-Dixon line, which is 34th Street, slow up, pal. Because when you hit the cobblestones passing Pennsylvania Station, your pace is slow. And with me, when I used to deliver, when he used to send me down the Gewurz to 24th, it was a three-hour push. So he gets this nervous kid, you know, a little nervous kid. He was a little nervous from Brooklyn. And he's got a habit of, he can't help it. He's got an impulse to push fast. So I said, Jack, I said, my God, I said, you know, I mean, this guys must have solidarity. He says, what do you mean? What does that mean? Well, that means stick together. Oh, yeah, stick together. And he's jumping like a cricket on a hot grill. Went out one day, went below 34th Street, came back in 20 minutes. I said, Jack, I says, we'll have to do something. Well, Jack, he said, what do you want? He said, the boss said to me, and I'm nervous and everything. I said, I'm nervous. You're not getting like him. I said, I'm nervous too, Jack, but please, before long, you'll have me making the run in 20 minutes. I said, I'll have to do something. He says, well, I'll see what I can do. So next day, there was only two wheels on his wagon with one little wheel in the middle. So I didn't break it much. I just broke it a little. I took a little piece out of the cast iron wheel, and I broke it so that when it went, boom, it dropped down and then it rum, bum, bum, and then boom, see? Jesus, he wore himself out. He made one run. He nearly got eye failure. He said, Yankees, I can't push that wagon. It moves so slow. It's terrible. I said, I just told you, Jack. I want to show you that it could be done. See, I slowed him up too. By God, after that, it took 2 hours. Gewurz came in, he says, what did you do to Jack? You bum you, what did you spoil that good work? He says, you spoil everybody. He was doing so good, he says. Slowed him down to 2 hours and everybody makes a 2 hour run. Oh, man. Then we used to go to a little restaurant there where I used to have on the, forget what it was. Gee, you can get crippled in lunchtime reaching for the pickles. I got scarred one time. Stabbed me, still got a scar. It's murder. But I had some happy days in New York. I mean, they was really wonderful.
They didn't have any like Howard Johnson.
Howard Johnson? What kind of spots are they?
Well, it's south of the Mason-Dixon line is the only place.
Oh, on the bus. Then I...
6th Avenue, 4th Street, I think.
Well,
they're kind of like us, you know, but they're all over the East.
Like a walk-in drive-in.
Oh, the Delaney's, you know Delaney's down there? Remember Delaney's still there with a horse on top?
Yeah, Jack Delaney, sure, yeah. That's still there.
They used to have a place there, was the most colorful place. It was called Life Cafeteria, and this is in the heart of the Depression. So they used to come in, you know, think people were so hungry and so tough, so they used to. The guy must have been a progressive, because only other guy like him who had a feeling for people could tolerate what went on. They used to have bottles of ketchup on the table, see? So they'd come in and they'd take a hot glass of water, they'd take the ketchup, they'd pour it into the hot water, and they'd order crackers, and they'd make, you know, concarney or something. And and I mean, even a case of ketchup was going away every week. I mean, the guy was nearly going broke, you know. And gee, they and Maxwell Bodenheim used to come in there, and they had a lot of interesting people. They had a Chinese guy who used to put on plays. I'll never forget him. He put on plays and he acted in all the plays himself. He used to hang around the dramatic school, the New Theater League, see. So one time, I think a few of the guys got together. We didn't have much money, but he wanted to put on a production. So he asked us to sponsor him, see. So we got a little money together, and he put on a play. Well, real funny there. Jesus, in one scene, he nearly killed himself. He really did. He grabbed himself somewhere by the neck and nearly strangled himself. Jesus, I'm telling you, I've never seen nothing like it. And he actually had to get up and try and save him because his arms got twisted somehow. And he was really lowering in altitude, quick. He was really free, was quiet, and he used to come around to the dramatic school. There was a lot of big people around there. Kumar Ghoshal used to teach me history of the theater. And I was pretty good in Shakespeare. And the Taming of the Shrew, I did a good job. But the trouble was, if I ate good for breakfast, I was good. If I was hungry, I was lousy. And one time I came in there, and we put that scene, Taming of the Shrew, on, and everything worked really good. I must have really been well fed that morning. Forget what I ate.